we've been doing this week. You haven't been here before, right?
No.
And you haven't been here before, so.
No, we just.
Yeah, right. So what we've been doing is looking at, we've been looking at the Christian calling to be peacemakers in various aspects of our lives. And we started out with a video on Monday called Green Shoots of Peace, which is put out by the ELCA, that looked at peacemaking in relationship to peacemaking with the earth, peacemaking with the poor, peacemaking with the enemy, peacemaking in our churches, and peacemaking through the arts. And really looking at the whole vocation of peacemaking in a very broad way, that it's not just about international relations, but it's about what you do in your churches, in your families, and in your communities, as well as global relations. And last week we talked more about, we're not going to spend much time on this, but just to lay out the basic assumption that at the heart of what it means to live out our Christian faith is to be peacemakers. This is not sort of a little extra thing over here that some people do if they're interested in it, but that it's in fact at the heart of a broad understanding of what it means to be a peacemaker is at the heart of our faith. And there are a lot of, you know, there's a lot of about this in the New Testament, but I think oftentimes when we read that word peace, in the Bible, and we use it a lot in our liturgy, that peace is in the liturgy, you know, there's probably 7 or 8 times in our liturgy. But we sort of think of it as something up here, you know, not about human relationships, it's peace with God, and we don't think about that is a word that is to empower us to go out into the world and to be peacemakers. And one of my favorite verses about peacemaking in the Bible is one I shared last time. So it's from 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, where Paul writes, "In Christ God was reconciling the world to himself, not counting their trespasses against them, and entrusting the message of reconciliation to us." So that the basic idea is that God has reconciled us through Jesus Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation in the world. So yesterday we really focused on the global arena, looking at what are the various ways that Christians can help build peace in the world. And it's that we talked last time about how a lot of times we feel powerless about this because these issues are so big, they're so complicated. What can one person or even a church do? But in fact, as we looked at various international issues, and we looked especially at the case of El Salvador, this is sort of an example of all the different ways that churches, in fact, do work for peace, ranging from education and exchange and travel to helping refugees to assistance through various projects. In a variety of other kinds of ways, direct assistance, and also working on government policies by lobbying Congress, and working in the case of El Salvador to end military assistance and to promote the negotiations between the conflicting parties. So today, what I want to look more at is take it down to a more local level and look at peacemaking in our communities, which is, I think, where a lot of us experience the threat of violence and conflict more immediately, especially those of us that live in cities, but I don't think only in cities. I think it's much more widespread than that. And I don't want to talk about just violence, because I think there are also other kinds of injustice that are threats to our harmony and well-being that aren't just what we traditionally think of as violence. But to look at what does it mean to be a peacemaker in our communities and our neighborhoods. There's an article I saw in the paper out here last week. I don't know if you saw it, but it was on the front page of the PI, but it was last Thursday. And the headline is, for Seattle paper, "City Caught in Summer of Gang Wars." I just wanted to read you a little bit. This is a picture of a violence, what is it called? Violence prevention counselor working with a couple young women from gangs. "Shortly after sunrise one day last week, suspected gang members hurled a crude gasoline firebomb at a yellow shingled home in a quiet Beacon Hill neighborhood. The living room and roof burst into flames, but the four occupants sleeping inside escaped without injury. The violence soon escalated in another episode of what police and community leaders are calling Seattle's bloodiest summer of gang warfare. 3 days after the attack, August 9th, someone in a dark-colored Buick Regal pulled aside a Ford Mustang and started shooting in retaliation for the firebombing, police said. The driver ducked the shotgun blast, but a passenger, 18-year-old Mon San Louis, was killed. There's a war going on out there, said Guy Carroz, a violence prevention counselor who works closely with gangs. This is the worst our city's ever seen. Then a little bit later in the article, several months ago it became clear there was a new level of violence that was occurring, Marie said. After the arson and shooting, we authorized a real heavy emphasis by the police department in the South End and other hotspots to discourage any retaliatory action. After expanding the gang unit in 1991, Rice will propose adding another four officers next year, and the city will also seek tougher gun control legislation next year, Murray said. The level of violence we are seeing is absolutely unacceptable, Murray said, and Mason attributes the upsurge to several factors, including turf fights among established gangs, influx of immigrants, although he emphasizes only a tiny fraction of new arrivals are involved in criminal activity. And most important, Mason fears the ease in which youngsters turn to violence to settle conflicts, some as minor as an angry glance. And a comment that middle-class youth increasingly are ensnared in gang activities, driven by the lure of adventure. We're seeing gang activity as recreational activity. I think this is not unique to Seattle. I mean, this is this. Now you folks live in Shelton, right? And you live in Ohio now, right?
I live in a little town in Ohio, but we spent 25 years
in LA. Yeah, right. Yeah. I sat with your son tonight.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Right. And you live in Bothell, right? So close to Seattle.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Right. So probably not the same kind of thing as here, but if you lived in LA, you probably have had some at least knowledge of this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The recent issue of Sojourners magazine, mm-hmm. they have the whole feature on how heads of gangs, mainly in Los Angeles, are meeting together with mm-hmm. peace groups mm-hmm. to try to turn the tide, because
right.
they're sick of attending mm-hmm. funerals of mm-hmm. their friends, mm-hmm. and they would like to be part of doing something mm-hmm. that will fix it. And
right.
so it's a fascinating, I'm partway through the issue,
mm-hmm.
but it's got some, you know, it's really fascinating to hear where these gang members are
right.
coming from, and, you know, why the anger is there.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of along that same line, in Tacoma, there's a mission church in a poor area, Salishan Mission, and I don't know, Ron Vignac, who's been up here other summers, he's the pastor, and he spoke at a women's retreat that I went to, and he is trying to reach out to gang members, and one thing that really struck me, he's gotten across to a couple of these young women who have been very active in gangs, and he's worked with them, visited them in prison, in, mm-hmm. in jail and everything, and tried to bring them the love of Christ. And one thing that stuck in my mind was one girl said that, you know, when I get out of here, I'm going to work for peace with all mm-hmm. I've got, but I'm really worried about my mother. And he said, well, what about your mother? Well, she's in the cell down the line, and she has not, you know, come to know Christ mm-hmm. as a peacemaker.
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
as well.
Well, that's
that's really worrisome, because it's reaching into the small communities,
right? Sure.
Not just big cities.
Oh, right.
Right.
And these efforts, like in Sojourners and all, are probably still relatively small compared to the probably it's the right.
Hopefully,
direction.
They're growing.
Right. Well, what I would like to do tonight is two things. First, spend a little bit of time. You know, this is one example of violence and injustice in our communities. But to widen out and sort of look at what are some other things that we feel are threats to the harmony and well-being of our communities, and it may be much broader than just, you know, just gang warfare. And then talk some more about some of the things churches can do related to that. But then I'd like to, if you're willing to do it, and it would be better for the larger group, but I think we still could do it, to actually do a role play. Have you ever done a role play where we are going to be a church council and we're going to be in a community where this is happening. And there's been some involvement of a few of our youth, and that, you know, to see what, you know, and try to play different roles. You've probably been on church committees and so on, and we could take on certain roles and sort of see how that goes and see what we might come up with, you know, as a response. So, but before we do that, we'll save ourselves plenty of time for that. But let's if you were to look at your own community, and I asked you the question, what threats to the, you know, what threats do you see to, in your community, to the harmony and well-being of your community? And the reason I use those words is it's not necessarily violence, but it could also be other things that, you know, that are threats to your community. It could even be loss of jobs, closing down of some big plant or whatever. Mm-hmm. Those are all things that, so what, you know, what are some things that people see? In the place where you live.
Kind of an increase in vandalism and no respect for property, no respect for the other person.
And is that a cause or effect? You want the
Either one. Yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, it's a threat to your security. I mean, you know, that's but you know, you could come at it from either direction. You know, I mean, really.
Yeah. It's just simple.
Yeah.
The economic issue is definitely a problem, and I'm going to be both unemployment and underemployment.
Yeah, that causes people to
be anger,
low self-esteem, they want too much time on their hands.
Yeah.
I think drugs and alcohol are a big part drugs or alcohol has been accepted for, and it still is accepted in the adult community.
Yeah.
As the social,
it's
socially okay, but
right. And it's very accessible.
Yeah.
Right.
So what do everybody's doing anything about?
Other things?
In our community, the young people claim that there's nothing to do
for
recreation. And so, most recent thing is just to drive around. Tragic car accidents, killing,
racing.
Well, and racing. You know, when you.
It's been around a long time.
It has.
I mean, it hasn't been the two of us.
Well, we lost four. Three in our community and one in our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Here
Now, this is right before high school graduate. These are the typical high school, you know, kids.
Well, are some had already been out of school, and some were not.
It's about that time.
Yeah.
Usually there's, it's not uncommon to have fatality at that time of the year between kids.
What I would add up here that is not necessarily a bad thing in itself, but is a because of the way our culture is. Can be a threat to harmony and well-being is a lot of single parent families.
That's a big.
And not like it's bad to be a single parent family, but the people are under so much stress.
Yeah.
With working and taking care of a house and a family that it and they don't maybe live in the same town with family and
sure.
And
but it's a social issue that has to be.
Yeah.
In our community, a lot of the single parent families, the absent spouse is in the correctional facility.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it doubly hard.
Shelter.
Yeah,
right.
We have the penitentiary.
Yeah.
Oh.
So that, and as a teacher, I often would have kids whose dads were in the correction center. And that adds a whole new dimension.
I'm sure it does.
Right.
You know, there's an old thing everyone always talked about, had for 20 years, increased violence in the media.
That's what I was trying to say.
Every community.
And everyone's trying to outdo the other one, violence.
Right, and you turn on the local news and all you see is like killing.
Well, there's been so much talk about that, they're now sort of coming up with scales of, well, our shows are having less, there is some effect, I think they're trying to.
But in the solution to that problem, they are in a way creating more of a problem, because by labeling these shows, an awful lot of kids go home from school to an empty house. And
There's a good one. That's got the A rating.
So there, they don't even have to watch. If they're into violence, they can choose which is the most violent. But nobody's there to say, you can't watch.
That's a stupid remedy.
The availability of guns.
Oh, yes.
I was trying to look among the news magazines today here, and they just didn't have the issue that had on the cover. This was only about 4 or 5 weeks ago about, youth and violence. When that report came out about 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, about how many, it got headline news about how many kids had either shot a gun or how quickly they could get a gun, if they wanted a gun,
And in some of the rural communities, hunting is so big that guns are in the home. And in a legitimate way, but they're available. And several kids that have been previously in my class have either killed a buddy or been killed themselves, just playing around. They didn't know it was loaded, nobody's at home.
That has happened more than once in the community.
Right, and Shelton's a big hunting area too.
In Shelton, it's the thing to be is to have a pickup truck with the gun in the back the gun rack that you can see in the back of the window. The Shelton macho thing to have your four wheel drive. The sign of manliness.
Yeah. Another thing is probably somewhat of a threat. I think is acceptance of all this as though it's okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. Acceptance or resignation.
That the stress, it's working, they just don't want to bother trying to.
We have a pawn shop in Shelton, and I was in the back room, and I thought I was looking at the arsenal. There was this store is 100 feet long, and 50 feet of it is back room. And there was a solid wall, like a couple of rows of solid artillery. I mean, there was enough to defend from the Russians. And I never saw so much armament in one place for years. In our little town. In one store.
Well, we have a case in our area, Philadelphia area. It's out in the suburbs, actually, but pretty far out suburb. I mean, this is like, at least 35, 40 miles from downtown Philadelphia, nice upper middle class community where a 15-year-old boy went and, he was getting bullied by this other guy, and just went in his aunt's gun case and took out a gun and went and, went into math class and just, killed this kid, and it turns out that, our youngest son, one of his best friends from school, his father is a defense attorney for the boy. Trying to get him tried as a juvenile. He's only 15, instead of an adult. But it's but the gun case, with all the guns and
I think that's another category: laws, just laws in general. Some are so effective. Some actually work opposite the way they should, rather than helping. I think they work against them, and
laws and maybe sentence, it's the laws and the way the courts work.
Yeah, the way the courts work.
Yeah.
Well, did you see the case not too long ago? This couple, they gave matching revolvers instead of rings.
Well, that was on...
When they got married?
When they got married, they had to match...
With this gun, I beware. Neither one of them cared for jewelry, and so...
They gave matching revolvers.
This was on the talk show. I could not believe it. Of course, then that takes care of no divorce is necessary. We don't agree, bam, you're gone, and that's the end of the story.
Oh, my God, I haven't heard this.
No, it was on a talk show.
That's one more indication of... That was in the paper, too.
It was, I didn't see it.
Well, have any of your, you know, have any of your churches, or churches that you know about, you started to talk about this church in Tacoma, and, but any churches that you know about or have been involved with, have done anything related to any of these issues?
Well, single-parent families, I think, our church has become what they call a visiting place, where children who have been removed from the home for whatever reason can come at a certain time on a certain day and visit with their parents. Because this can't happen. I mean, they're in foster care because of whatever. And so members of our congregation are there also.
They use our facility, but they believe also there are people who volunteered to be the, just to be there. Because they can't be left by themselves, so a parent visits.
Well, in a roundabout way, our church has quite a large foundation, and the money in it, the interest each year, part of the interest, a great part of the interest is given for the community, and none of it comes back to our congregation, except I think a percentage of it goes back in to keep the foundation going and increasing in value, but it's all given to the community, and so we're trying to support those organizations which are already established rather than just establishing another one that duplicates what someone else is doing. And it may be an easy way out, but at least we put thousands and thousands of dollars in the community in that way each year.
It's a new project.
That's great, yeah. I know a lot of churches have, I mean, you know, it may be far-fetched to think of this as a peacemaking, or you know, but I think it. Well, I think it is. Yeah. A lot of churches have AA groups, and you know.
We have that.
We
meet in the church.
Right. Yeah.
It's really not a church sponsored.
Sponsored, but you
know, but they need a place to meet. Right. Provide the place you're helping.
And I know a lot of churches also do after-school programs.
That's right. After-school.
Yeah. We have a youth group in our church.
Yeah. Right, but I think a lot of churches also do things that aren't just for the kids in the church, but like have it, you know, after school and the...
My daughter always works in one of those programs, and I don't know if this is a sign of the times, but I think it is. It's hard to get volunteers with all the mothers working today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's really a struggle to get people to man it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's a very depressing subject. Especially...
It is. It's like an uphill battle, but I think partly what we tried to do yesterday in the global scene and what we're trying to do here, all of a sudden it makes it so harder to deal in our own communities. I mean, you know, it's hard at the global level too, but I think, you know, a lot of times it's hard to be creative about this stuff, I think. It's very hard.
I went to a session on evangelism down at Community Church of Joy in Arizona.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, and we went there.
Oh, in April?
No, I mean, we've been there.
Okay, but anyway, one of the presenters, Tom Agum, was about missions and how in their church they have involved young people in doing for others. Instead of, you know, the kids are bored, they have nothing to do.
Right.
If they reach out for others, and I was so moved by his session. He was telling how they started out on a small scale. I mean, they would help with the soup kitchen locally, and then they went like a state level, and then they raised some money to have a group of kids go to Mexico and help over spring break.
Wow.
And they even made a trip to Russia and with a group of young people. And as I was listening to all of this, you know, I was getting kind of wiping my eyes, and this young woman next to me, she was really having a struggle. She kept getting out more Kleenex, and finally, when he was through, she turned to me and she said, I was one of those young people that have gone all of these things.
Yeah.
And she said, now my kids are finally old enough to participate. And I thought, wow, you know, most kids at the younger age can't wait till they're confirmed. confirmed and graduated from church.
Right.
But she didn't feel that way, and her kids were just eager. And so I think that could be the answer.
Yeah, it's the whole idea of reversing that idea of, you know, what we do for them, but getting them to do for,
you know. And there are opportunities in every community. We've got nursing home, you know, there are a lot of lonely people out there that you can, you start small, and you don't plan a trip to Russia, but it can grow, and I think that could be an answer. We have, we've just talked about it, we haven't done anything yet.
Our church does that with the young people going out during the summer, but with about five other Lutheran churches.
Sure.
And, you know, some adults, and they go away and they build a house or do
whatever. Habitat for Humanity is one way to involved.
Yep.
But there are, you know, there must be other things if we were to look.
And then we have a lot of old people in our congregation, sometimes they go out and, you know, they have a house and they can afford it, but they can't afford to paint it or something.
Sure, isn't that our men's group?
That's our men's group. If we were to get the young people involved.
See, our men are too old.
So there are things. I think we're so used to thinking of things we can do with the young people, you know, games and
or they're entertained enough.
I know. You have to learn to
So that could be an answer.
Right. Right. No, I think I know. I was involved when I was in college. 9 Lutheran churches in Northwest Seattle banded together. They were part of something called Northwest Lutheran Parish, and they hired this woman who started a program to serve teenage youth by using young adults in those congregations. You know, people between the ages basically of 18 and 25, and. We ended up starting this teen drop-in center called The Place, and it was staffed by the college-age students, you know. I think sometimes we were way out on a limb, you know, when I think about it, but it was trying to deal with the problem of kids having nothing to do.
Right.
And some of these kids were, you know, drug addicts and stuff, and it was, and we had a lot of adults, too, as sort of resource people, like we had counselors and stuff, but,
yeah. I've always thought about that, too, that find some way to motivate the kids to put them to work, do things that are good.
Yeah.
If you could do that, but I'm not sure how it could be done. That's the thing there.
Yeah, but, you know,
start small and do something and make it grow.
Well, I know in our church, I mean, I think we're going to this role play here. I think it's getting late, but I know our church, when we were vandalized about 2 years ago, year and a half ago. And all the windows in my office were broken. I mean, like there were all these little panes, and there were like 18 of them that were all broken.
They made sure they got every one.
And you know how old the kids that were that did it? They're like 8 years old. And worse than that was, is it ended up, I mean, there were people in the community, and like our sons have since been on teams with them. I remember the first time I was at a baseball game, and ended up meeting the mother of one of the boys, you know, and it was sort of like this awkward silence, and they still owed us some money for the windows. I mean, we ended up finding out who did it. But it's like,
well, did they have any reasoning for why they did it, or?
Just doing something wild. But
Where was the mother at this time?
They were working, but, you know, I mean.
Kids home alone?
Running around, yeah. But, so anyway, well, are you up for this idea of a role play? We're gonna try to do a role play for a church council meeting. The situation is we live in a suburb of a large city, mostly white community. We are a Lutheran church, and our church is pretty homogenous. It's basically a white church. And our community has, over the last year, been increasingly threatened by rivalry between two gangs. And that's sort of similar to the story we heard in the Seattle paper. The kids in the gangs are high school kids from our area. Most of them have cars. Or some, enough kids have cars that they can drive around. They don't have a problem. We're suburban, but they can still get around. And it's an old suburb. It's not like a real, you know, upper middle class suburb. The kids have been, you know, into drugs and have begun carrying guns. And then several months ago, a turf battle developed between these two gangs, okay? So, you know, trying to say this is our area and this is your area. And the struggle over disputed territory. The rivalry started, they first started doing things like just slashing each other's tires and, you know, vandalizing each other's cars. And then they started vandalizing places in the community. And like our church, this mythical church we're all members of, was windows were smashed and graffiti was put on the walls. You know, this is gang, you know, this is territory of this gang. And then last week, an innocent bystander was shot, not killed, but wounded in a drive-by. This precipitated the sense of, you know, this is a crisis in our community. And so we've decided as a church to have a meeting about, well, should we make any response to this, you know, other than erasing the graffiti or, you know, I mean, and getting the windows fixed. And so what we need is we need one person to be the chairperson of the council, say we're a church council. And we would need a couple people that, I mean, I think we'll just get into it, but a couple people that would be wanting to really do something, you know, let's do this or do that. And a couple people that would be more reluctant, cautious, and probably one person who never really likes to do anything that's too outward oriented, you know. So who would you want to be the chairperson of the council? How about you, Carl? You'd be good.
I was a church council.
I know, but you can think of your flag incident, right? Yeah. Okay. Who would be willing? Well, Sue, I think you should definitely be somebody who'd come in with an idea about something to do.
Come up with one.
And anybody else be willing to sort of put forward some ideas? Okay. Good. Mark. Okay. And the rest of us can, you know, sort of decide, you know, how we want to play our roles. We may, you know, think we could all bring in ideas.
I'll be the negative one because somebody's going to be the bad guy.
Yeah. That's easy to do.
Well, you can do that.
Okay.
Well,
so
this is role play.
Right, this is role play.
And you can stay where we are.
But let's try to do
chair.
It for,
okay.
Let's try to do it for, you know, 10, not more than about 10 minutes, so we can.
Well, no, soon the minutes are over with, the coffee is distributed.
Right.
Are you in this?
Yeah, I'm going to be in this.
You've just reported. You've just made the report.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, we've just heard the report of the investigative committee has explained to us the problem of this vandalism into our church. And so we need some, how should we respond to this? What should we do about it?
Do we know the groups or the people that are involved at all?
I don't know.
Well, I have heard that a couple kids that, in fact, have attended our youth group, they're not members of our church, but actually have been involved in one of these gangs. And so it's pretty close to home, I think. You know, these are kids that, you know, we know some of their families. And, you know, it's a pretty dangerous situation. I mean, I'm frankly worried about letting my kids out on the street to play. I mean, with the guns that are going around and everything, you know, I mean, I just think this is something that's got to give here. I mean, this is just terrible.
This is something, I'm sure somebody must have made a report to the police department about our vandalism.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
I think we should not just have a committee for it, but find out if we can work with those people within the gangs and be able to, those people that we do have contact with.
You mean make contact with the gang?
Yes, it's up there. That's our bit of trouble, that we have to talk with the people that we do know within a gang-related people, so that if we can address what problems they have as gang people, listen to their side and find out if
you think they'd come?
The ones that we address them in the right way, there's a way that...
Well, I think he's all wrong. I think we should hire a lawyer and get them, sue these people and get money, and have them pay for everything in the church to fix it up, and if we need to put bars in our windows, we should do that. And we should see that these kids get punished severely for this.
You think that'll be the church?
They'll get more angry. I think they'll get more angry, and then they could probably even bomb the church.
I don't think we can put bars on the windows. That would be a fire hazard. I don't think the fire department would allow that.
And then we'd have a fire, and then how would we get out of it?
That's that one person talking at the time.
Since perhaps some people who have had connection with the gangs have previously been in our youth group, maybe the youth group would be a place to start. Get the youth group together for a meeting and ask them, you know, what do they think we could do about this? Because they probably know the kids who are involved. And maybe through them we could get some cooperation and some ideas as to where we can go.
So we have two here talking about some type of contact or cooperation, and we have somebody that
I think Mark is on the right track here. The church's role in the community is to be a community church, not just for the congregation, but a resource for the community. Mm-hmm. How about the church contacting Block Watch committees and all these other people who are also trying to do good in the community?
Coordinate
the work to be a force in the community, not just in the congregation.
Well, there's other youth groups, Boy Scouts, or other things like that.
I'm worried too, though, that, you know, if we invited these gang members into our church, you know, like it might have bad influence on our kids. I mean, you know,
and that will spread to the other kids.
There's a way of addressing this is that normally with gang-related people on the streets already, that the law enforcement already know about the gang-related incidents, especially if we've already reported it. And the law enforcement would also know how to basically address gang-related people.
How to contact them?
Yeah, how to contact them and what
they know who they are.
Know who they are, and that we do have people that have addressed the people that are been to church functions. We already have a partway in already to do that contact that we want to do, because if we want to sort of soothe over both gang relations and trouble with two different gangs, if we can work with one gang, we could start working with the other gang, and then that way we can start.
Response to that, what do you
think? That's a good idea.
Yeah, I was wondering with the graffiti if we might either talk with somebody at the school who knows them, or find somebody in one of the gangs who really is an artist, and ask them to express themselves, maybe give them a wall of the church or something that they've graffitied and have them do a mural.
Let's just throw out these ideas and not evaluate them.
We have
to just get the ideas
on the table. So if I could step on my goal, that has been done.
Yeah. Ethnic murals and so on, they're beautiful. Yeah. And they don't touch the walls after that, because they're proud of what they've done. And I mean, isn't that part of it? When you use graffiti, it's, look, this is my addition to the world, or my whatever.
Our church is possible. It's so beautiful and, you know, aesthetic. And I mean, it's so chunky. I mean, my goodness.
It wouldn't need to be inside. I mean, it could be on the outside.
Or maybe, how about putting up a special build another wall, or put a spot where it would go.
Or side of a building in
town. Create a new space for it to go.
To get back into my role again, you have to be very careful about what they put out there, you know.
Well, they'd have to draw you a diagram first, and then you'd have to.
Because there's lots of, from what I understand with these gang symbols, right, and they're sort of like territory identification things. I mean, I had a client one time who we happened to be looking at some buildings downtown, and there was just what I thought was graffiti on the wall, and she said to me, "Oh, you have the so-and-so's here." I was, "What do you mean we have this?" She said, "You see that symbol on the wall?" And I didn't know if she was screwy or she really was telling the truth. I think, I think maybe now, because it's even our little town. Anyway, so we've got some ideas of having a place, inviting the most significant, it sounds like, is inviting these gang members to a meeting and involving our youth. But, you're getting ready. I just want to give everybody a chance.
I have a question. Okay, if we as a church found some facility for sort of a youth center, a place where they could do other things besides kill each other, if we had basketball or pool or something.
Open up the church, other than Sunday, you mean?
But my question is, if they're that antagonistic, would they get in a fight over a pool game or a basketball game?
That's right. I don't know. Then we bring the trouble back into the church. Hmm.
Or I'm not saying you have to have it in the church, but maybe you could work with a school or something.
Well, we would be the peacemakers, and that's part of what church is supposed to be, is to be the peacemakers of community and spiritual growth and understanding that we are reaching out as God's people to the people that are in church. We are not doing that. We're not doing what God calls us to do.
I mean, it has to be a community effort. Maybe it could be opening up the school gym or something and just having your church members be the chaperones.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to not jump the gun and sort of think what we know exactly what's needed before we talk, before we talk to them and sort of get an idea. I think the first thing is to try to get this, shooting and stuff to stop. I mean, I think that's...
Can we ask the law enforcement people where they, what they think that we can do? I mean, if they thought opening up the church as a youth center would help, or providing this place for the graffiti or whatever, they know what... They could probably have some input.
Sometimes, like with a little child, if you're saying, no, you can't do this, and we're saying, no, we don't want this gang war stuff, we need to have, but yes, you can do this. And it just occurred to me, maybe, if the community is in a place where, like, there's organized basketball, some sports team that we could get money together to sponsor trips to the tickets to go to the whatever game, I don't know, the Mariners or whatever, to try to, as I don't know the gang members are going to come to a place and play pool or basketball. I think there has to be some things that go before that. But if we were to be able to show them that we care for them and those provide some opportunities that they don't get, because oftentimes they're from a group in society that are sort of disenfranchised, which is why they're angry, which is why they become part of
it. From time to time you read that there's specials in the paper about a priest or something in the L.A. There's a famous, well-known priest in downtown L.A. who just really got to know these kids one-to-one. And in fact, he was called to officiate some of the funerals, this is his partner, and so he would help line up jobs for these kids. I mean, he became their advocate to the connection to the real world.
I'm going to step out of my role again.
We're just about wrapping up here anyway.
I think that's a good idea, but I think that these kids probably have low self-esteem, and I really think they should be brought into the church and say, you ruined a place that is very special to us, and you have the responsibility to help us fix this up and make it right again. You don't have to do this, but...
make the opportunity.
That's right, and you are responsible for this. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, we would like you to come and visit us when we dedicate this room again or something.
Sure.
You know, have a reason for, and that way get them in, because like you say, I think the idea of having like them play pool and basketball is good, but they're not
going to. How are you going to get them there?
It's like eating health food after you've been eating Twinkies. You're not going to do it in one fell's swoop, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
But if you could think of some small steps.
Right.
That could lead up to some positive things, but.
And like he said, get the leaders of the gangs and talk to them first.
How about community counseling of the parents of people? Is that a step worth? Could that do any good?
Take some specialties. I don't know if us as a council can, as a church council that we have, we could look into what is out there for that.
We have a man in our community, Jim.
We have a social worker.
There's lots of people, yeah, we have to find, we should find out what's available.
You know, there's counseling in our church and, you know, he would be.
Oftentimes, the parents of young people who are in this predicament have sort of written them off and would not voluntarily go to a counseling session. I know in the schools, we would provide parenting classes for particular problems. And the ones that came were the kids, you know, the A students.
The parents were concerned you with.
They don't need.
They want to know.
It's the ones that don't have parents or they're divorced or the dads.
In the prison.
Yeah.
Or the prisoner, long gone.
Once we even went to paying them or something, I forget, to get those parents out.
The incentive.
In some way, or deducting something from fees or whatever to get the parents to come.
And did they?
I don't know.
Yeah, a very small percentage will, you know, come. And sometimes it's a problem like transportation.
Well, we're working, we're down.
Well, I think,
I'm just going to get the committees knowing that you checked.
Every one of you come back here at midnight on July 31st, and we'll.
Right. So you can open up the
bowling. Right. Well, I'll say free popcorn. Oh, that's a topic.
Maybe it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I think the important thing is to do something.
Yeah. No, I think that was very interesting because I think what came out were just a variety of directions that are really really important. I mean, I think that you know, I think some of the themes that, you know, first of all, one of the things I saw was respect for the kids involved. I mean, talking directly to them, trying to.
Probably the first time the straight community wanted to talk to them. That's been the problem, man.
And the kind of respect also implied by expecting them to take some responsibility. I think that's also respect. Involving our own kids, you know, what how could they help us in this, you know, relating to other groups, your approach of how can we be a force in the community to deal with this? I think that's really key, and we didn't go into that too much, but as one church, we may not be able to do too much if we're sort of small, but can we be a force in the community to get this to be a community issue and share people together? The providing alternatives, whether using our space or, you know, helping to provide person hours so that other space can be used. That's another real good idea. And the whole graffiti thing where I made my big eyes and stuff. I just was trying to
make my church. The whole five-year church happened there.
You know, holy cow. But that's what I almost call that's a sort of like a radical reversal kind of thing. I mean, that's a sort of outlandish, wonderful thing because it's like, okay, you know, you messed up this thing, but now you can make it into something beautiful. And I mean, that, you know, most of society goes completely against that. I mean, that just is like, all, I mean, that's not, you know,
right. You know, that's society's reaction.
You know,
is put on more police onto the police force. But I think that has a very negative, because it's a, then
that's
the gangs
right.
are going to have
then
to figure out a way to get around.
Angry. Yeah.
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 So, but right. that, so as a church, we need to give the other the other plan, because most people are going to say, let's hire 10 more police officers.
Or we put, I mean, what we did at our church, we put Lux on the windows, come, you know, I mean, you have to do that, I mean, that's a property issue, but it's like, and then some churches end up leaving the neighborhood eventually. I mean, that's what, you know, I mean, you know, people abandon their churches.
Has anybody tried growing ivy at the side of the building? I'm serious.
That's a problem, because...
It's hard to get through that.
Yeah.
And they worked out...
Takes a while to grow it up.
Maybe you secretly wanted to get rid of the ivy?
But I think we here are all probably, even with your negative comments, you couldn't even keep away from your positive comments. But we're all more sort of, you know, I think we're not a typical church council probably here.
That's for sure.
I think that it is hard for the church a lot of times, especially when we feel threatened, either as a church, our physical building, but also as families in a community, to have creative responses. But I think, you know, that peace really does begin in our homes and in our communities, and that there's a lot churches can do on this.
We have a pastor in our area. He's not Lutheran, but he's one of those who's always out there if there's a problem in the community. Mm-hmm. And because we have a small gang problem and loitering problem, he got the clergy together, and they would walk the streets on Saturday nights. Mm-hmm. And anybody loitering, they'd go up to them and say, you know, well, is there anything we can help you with, and so on. Mm-hmm. Which is a great idea, but it sounds great in the paper, but I don't really think that in itself. First of all, it doesn't last that long. You're not going to do this every Saturday night for the rest of your life. And even though it gets a lot of press, I have a feeling the kids that are hardened just look at you and think, well, crumb. Maybe not. I don't know. Might reach one or two people, but at least he's trying.
Well, I know, as being a pastor, to try to do things like that without the support of your church is real hard. I mean, it's either you're not going to make it a priority, even if you're personally committed to it. It's a lot of times really, and I think it's got to be, these things have to be a priority of not just like the pastor or the pastor and one or two people, but, you know, it's not like the whole church has to be behind it, but enough people have to be behind it that it can be, you know, that it could be a priority for the church.
If at a point in time, one of the young people involved is somebody in the church. I read somewhere, you know, how the first reaction of the congregation is, where are the parents and everything? Yeah. But then someone brought them around to thinking that, you know, this child was baptized into our community. And so where were we when it didn't? They didn't just snap all of a sudden there in a negative mode. It was a progressive thing. And where were those of us who witnessed that baptism?
We were in the congregation saying yes to all those questions that were asked about, will you
support
my child's father? Those questions bring some responsibility.
Sure, they do.
You're right.
And so more than pointing the finger at those terrible parents who just didn't do their job.
But people move around so much.
Yeah, it's true.
Don't know
these
kids.
But that's true in most communities. Although it's surprising where I live is still very, it's still very traditional and parochial. A lot of it, you know, we're a lot of three generations in our church. I mean, we're in a city, you know. But
Philadelphia.
I mean, but it's, you know.
We have that. You know, there's the original, the hardcore people from the time it was chartered.
Sure. We have people in their late 70s and, you know, and 80, early 80s, and then we've got the people, you know, that are their, you know, children and then the grandchildren, and they still come. And we, you know, it's actually, you know, it's amazing that there are big urban cities where you still have places where the mobility, I think people are much more mobile in the West. I think that there are places in the East where people are, you know, people still, they live within a couple miles of their folks, and, you know, it's very traditional still. It's interesting because we think of the East, I mean, when we live out here, we think of the East as being more ahead of the West in some ways. That's not true. I mean, the West, I think, social change comes to the West first.
Well, it's the coasts. The coasts are more advanced, I think.
Well, so Philadelphia's on the East Coast, and, you know.
It's still coast.
And you know, Queens and New York City is the same way. I mean, everyone in Queens has never gone to New York City and Manhattan, and they are as parochial as you would ever find in, you know, someplace in London. Well, I think it's about time for us to move here, but thank you for coming here.
Thank you. That was a good show.